Welcome to Make a Difference, a podcast about reflection and self-improvement. Each month, the podcast will choose a series of quotes centered around a topic for reflection and then thoughts for discussion and implementation. We all get stuck sometimes, and these shows are designed to show us a way to get unstuck. These shows are published Monday through Friday. Join us daily to make a difference on how you view your personal outlook and hopefully improve it. We will kick off the show with your host, Mark Quinn, after this short break.
Welcome back to Make a Difference. I'm glad you've chosen to join us today because I'm excited about the guest that I want to introduce to you. Jeff Bradbury is from TeacherCast Podcast, and it's now part of the TeacherCast Educational Network. Jeff can be found at www.teachercast.net. In this episode, we're going to take a look at podcasting and social media in general, and what kind of effects they can have in the classroom as a means of encouraging student learning. We're also going to take a look at the ISSE standards and how they apply to this type of medium. We're going to spend about 30 minutes with Jeff, and whether it's your first year of teaching and you're brand new to the classroom, or you're a veteran with many years of experience, I'm sure you're going to find something of interest. So right after this short break, we're going to join Jeff Bradbury of TeacherCast. I'm really excited to introduce Jeff Bradbury to you. I followed Jeff as a podcaster for many years. I followed him on Twitter. He's a very dynamic individual, and I want to introduce him to you today, and we're going to have a conversation about podcasting, which he's been doing for a long time. Jeff, how many years have you been podcasting?
I have been podcasting now for 9 years total, 8 years with TeacherCast.
And what caused you to go into TeacherCast? Because that's a site I've followed for a long time.
Well, thank you for that. TeacherCast turned 8 years old in July. And really, it was an answer for how can I help out those around me? And I always have this thing where if you're looking for information, I can send you to 5 or 6 or 8 different sites that are going to answer your questions. But really, how many are you going to actually go to? And we know that our students learn 3 different ways, visually, kinesthetically, and aurally. And you kind of realize that if a kid can learn in those 3 ways, so can us as adults. So yeah. I really tried to create a one-stop shop where if you want to listen to it, read about it, watch it, or if you needed to, I'll come out and I'll do it for you live, as a show. And I've always looked at TeacherCast as that one-stop shop with a variety of different teaching methods. Anything you want to learn, here it is.
Very cool. And I agree with you. There is something very cool about being able to get it the way you want it and make sense of it the way you want it. And you're very effective at that.
Thank you.
So I started with podcasting. And the reason that I did is podcasting is kind of coming through its second renaissance, if you will. There was, a period back around 2010 that people were doing it nearly as easy as it is now. And in the first show, we started talking about the concept of, if you have an idea, grab your iPhone and do it. Record it. We talked about Anchor.fm and the ease of, how it is to even do the visual editor and all the different things like that. And you don't need to be into Audacity or an Audition or a complicated piece of software. It's about content. Now, more than ever, I think the playing field and the technology's leveled. But I think what the challenge is now is being a good storyteller. And I think for our students, the challenge is that in the process of teaching the writing process, we crush the story. And
I completely agree with that. Storytelling is everything these days. Trying to keep somebody's attention from the beginning of the show to the end of the show really is where it is. And if you look at any platform that keeps analytics, it's not necessarily the number of hits or the number of downloads, it's length of time listening to the content.
I agree. And I think, one of the goals I want to try to do with this show a little bit is try and talk to people, because teachers feel this tremendous amount of pressure about addressing all the standards that they need to do and getting the lessons right and all the different pressures that classroom teachers have. And most people outside of education have no concept of that pressure and what it feels like to be under the gun that a classroom teacher has, because you're always hitting a moving target or trying to. I think, when you look at the ISSE standards, and I'll have a link to that in the show notes, there's a couple of different places where I think podcasting really is exciting. Number 2 with the digital citizen, number 6 with the creative communicator, and number 7 with the global collaborator, I think are the real highlights that a person can
can go to. And I would be curious on your opinion about helping a student find their voice, either in writing or in speaking, because I think that's the sweet spot for podcasting. What's your opinion?
I totally agree with that. You know, we just had the closing of the ISTE proposals, and, you know, there you are looking at these proposals, and I put in a few around podcasting, and you realize that podcasting not only works well in ISTE standards for teachers, but for students, for coaches, and even if you look at the ones for administrators, I mean, you could throw audio and video, podcasting, whatever the concept is that you want to call this thing, into seriously, the majority of the standards can be addressed by this. It's individual learning, it's on-demand learning, it's professional content, it's sharing ideas with others, it's new and emerging technologies, it's STEM education, it's, I can go on and on with all these different things. It really does hit a lot of mile markers, I would say, sure, with the way that things are going right now. And, you know, right now I have the opportunity to bring audio and video production, as your, does yourself, into the lives of our young learners. And it's pretty amazing to show them how this can be transformative, not only in their own learnings, but in the learnings of others. And it's all about telling stories.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, when you look at this and we talk about digital identity, I can't think of a more important thing for people to be able to define and learn to define before they graduate the K-12 environment than cultivating your digital identity. Because what was the statistic I read recently? 80% of employers are going to try to identify you through a Google search before they extend the opportunity for an interview. If your digital identity is not to their liking or their culture, that interview is not extended.
I agree. And we found that out this summer, both in the positive and the negative sense of all that stuff. And my philosophy with students is simple. And basically, my philosophy is this. We have 13 years with our students, and we only have one job as educators. We need to get them to answer one question and one question only. And if they can't answer that question after 13 years, then we haven't done our job. And that question, of course, is the almighty, tell me about yourself. If
yeah,
a kid can't do that, then no employer is going to get them to a second question. No college application is going to pass them through the next round if they can't tell me about yourself. Right now, I have an awesome opportunity to work with 6th, 7th, and 8th graders in our middle school. We're making digital portfolios, and every single project in there, no matter what it is all around the theme of, tell me about yourself. Why are you awesome? I mean, seriously, the first project that we did, I asked the kids to write down 10 reasons why they're awesome.
How did that go?
Awesome.
I'm curious because it seems like, you know, what I'm finding, and my students are coming in as adults, as soon as that question turns on them, it's very uncomfortable and they clam up.
Yes.
And it's like, guys, this is the one time you get to sit down. Our culture crushes people to say it's not polite to talk about yourself. It's not polite to expound on what you do well. And yet in an interview, after we tell you don't do that, that's exactly what we're asking you to do. Well, tell the story of you.
We started basic, right? Because we started with asking the questions. What makes you amazing? What makes you great? Somebody, you know, you are here because somebody loves you. What are some of those reasons? I don't know. Well, okay. Do you speak a different language? Do you come from another country? Are you left-handed? Do you eat fruit? We just went basic, 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 and then that builds up. And now that we have these reasons of why we're awesome, you know, the next project that we did was an inspirational poster, and all the quotes were PBSIS kind of self-motivational things. And then from there, we went into building a website. And then from there, we went into building a logo. And I just had the kids building a logo for themselves. And it was, you know, the logo has to identify with them, much like Nike or Starbucks or McDonald's or anything like that. And these kids are going, I don't have anything that I can identify with. And I said, go back to day one where we wrote down 10 reasons why we're awesome. Pull from that. You know, are you Mexican? Great. Let's take the Mexican flag colors, put it in our logo, and then maybe put a baseball on it or a football or, you know, some other thing that you can identify with as being, I am awesome because. And now after a month of being with them, they're finally starting to open up of, oh, I have value. I have worth. I am amazed. Somebody loves me because I'm here to do this. And again, I'm helping them tell the story of themselves. And it's been a pretty awesome month, and I can't wait to see how it's going to end.
And I think what's really cool with what you're doing is you're taking a prompt, which is normally, for many students, a dead-end stop rather than a springboard, and you're turning it into a springboard. And if you're looking at the ITSTE standards, for those at home that are keeping score, we're at number 6, creative communicators. Students choose appropriate platforms and tools for meeting the desired objectives. And you're doing it. And it's awesome. What podcasting brings, and many other digital things, whether it's in writing or video or anything else, what is the appropriate medium? You know, if you need the visuals, you bring video into it. But if the story is compelling because of the person's voice and the way that they express themselves verbally, stay with the one that's simple. Use the right tool at the right time. It's about the story and how you wish to communicate it.
I completely agree with that. It's one of those things that every student, every person has to figure out. And, you know, I'm in a variety of podcaster social groups. And even last week, we all kind of settled on a conversation around the concept of imposter syndrome, which is, you know, we all sit here with microphones and we do our thing every week. But when we have to have the microphone turned on us, are we comfortable in our own skin to talk about our journey? Or do we just hide behind the fact that we're the host of our own show and I get to ask you anything and watch you squirm? And how different is that when somebody asks us to squirm for a little bit? I got to tell you, it's real. You know, for many podcasters out there, again, tell me about yourself is the hardest question.
Not only just telling about yourself, what is it that, you know, I tell my students when they start to build their websites or they start to do videos or, you know, whether they're doing backpacking projects, you have to connect emotionally. That is the key to getting to somebody to really engage with you. If it's watching paint dry, understand that they're not really engaged. Now, you might be because you have an emotional investment, but until they have one to join you, it's not a real conversation. And I think that's the other thing that for students, we've got to continue to coach them towards. It's okay to be emotional. It's okay to be excited. For my kids in the broadcasting school that I write with, it's about what emotion are you trying to trigger? You know, rage can make great talk radio, but you got to know where you're at or it can get you fired. Happiness can be a great thing. Joy, teaching informationally to help somebody learn things. You know, I take a look at the digital writing process. I take the writing process and I kind of flip it. And I'd be curious to see how you react with this. But the first step in the digital writing process is what medium are you going to choose to create on? Before you ever get to anything of what are you going to say and everything else, you need to figure out what is your intent to create for and then figure out if everything that follows it matches that medium. Well, I'd be curious from your creatives, you work in all the mediums. How do you approach it?
I approach it with who is my target audience and how do they want to receive the information, which is actually the next step into what you just said. Because you said,
bingo.
What is the medium I want? Well, again, if I have somebody who comes to TeacherCast and is interested in learning how to do something on a Google slide, they might want to read about it. But it also might be better for a YouTube video. If somebody wants to learn how to flip their classroom, that just might be a 15-minute audio podcast rather than a 3,000-word blog post. That's the hard part about TeacherCast is you have to figure out what's the content, what are people asking for, where are they asking it for, but most importantly, how. YouTube has its purposes. I was watching a YouTube video the other day about popular social networks over time. You'd be surprised at how popular SlideShare is. But when do we think about just putting out a simple slide presentation and sticking it on SlideShare and just embedding that onto our blog post, right? Or anything.
So, yeah, YouTube is usually the first thing that comes to mind and SlideShare is a very distant second,
right?
Third, fourth, fifth.
But when you're on LinkedIn, people would rather shift through slides than anything else.
And that, to my point, is very cool. Why do you think that is on LinkedIn versus, say, YouTube? And I'm audience. Curious to see what you say.
YouTube audience, you can get away with a minute video. On LinkedIn, the average time that's recommended is 15 seconds or less. Because when you think about it, when do most people play on LinkedIn? When they're on their phone and they're bored and all they're doing is sliding up with their thumbs. So LinkedIn video must be short and must have captions or else no one's going to care about it.
And to your point, for those at home keeping score, number 7, global collaborator. Students use digital tools to connect with learners from a variety of backgrounds and cultures, engaging them. You know, what I love about this conversation is it's just following right down the list. And when we as teachers sometimes struggle with the standards of trying to fit technology, and it's like a round peg in a square hole. But if you just allow the conversation to flow, everything kind of falls into place.
I think there's a difference. I think it's the dog and the tail, right? when people say, how is your presentation, your lesson, how is it fitting into the ISTE standards? I think there's a lot of stress involved in that. I can't do this unless I know what standard it's hitting. I've been teaching for 18 years. I've never once asked myself any of those kinds of questions.
I fill them in after the plan's done.
Right. Now, again, maybe that's the orchestra teacher coming out of what you have a concert coming up in 3 weeks. Just get to the concert. Forget what standard you're hitting. Just they have to play the violin. And it's the same thing now. Like, you've got a broadcast to put together. Just get them to talk. Oh, by the way, it hits standard 14.Q or something like that, right? The standards were created as an answer first. And a leader second, although I'm sure that I'll get slammed for saying it that way.
Perhaps, but I'm in agreement with you. And where I wanted to take the second half of the conversation, now that we've kind of talked about this a little bit and got the educational rules of the road down, if you will, the concept that I wanted to sit down and continue with is giving people ideas and reasons why they should do a podcast or why they should do a blog or different things. And one of the brilliant things that social media has brought to the educational process is the way to communicate with outside stakeholders. And what I believe is we are not shy about going and asking for a levy. We're not shy about doing all these different things. But what have we done between these things that help people understand what's truly going on in our classrooms? And I don't think we as educators do a good enough job about that. And I think we're missing a terrific one to keep people going, because really we have a captive audience. The first people that are going to want to sign up for that type of thing is the parents. When a child comes home and says, hey, listen to this, this is what I did, you know that somebody's going to tune in, almost to the point of a captive audience. And the kids are going to want to share that. And I think that when we can begin to share the day-to-day growth, or we're doing this and people know that this is happening and this is what the result was, the power that social media brings to the educational process just cannot be understated. Thoughts?
Yeah, I've got a lot of thoughts on that one, and sit back on this one.
Oh.
I have a couple of thoughts. One, I firmly believe that social media has destroyed education in many senses. You know, why do I create the work on TeacherCast that I do? Am I sharing something from my classroom? Am I link building? Am I trying to get noticed by others? Am I looking to become the next edu celebrity? Am I trying to get noticed by Google SEO to have everybody, not just educators, try to find the website to then bring bigger analytics to then find sponsorship? Am I trying to be the cool guy in the room, so I'm writing 10 reasons to use Google Classroom because it's there? Am I trying to support my family? By doing so, I'm going to partner up or create a bunch of content on a specific application to then become an ambassador, which by definition, the word ambassador is free labor. And by definition, the word free labor is called research and development for a company. And then in turn, maybe I get a free code for my school, for maybe for my, I can go on to that one for hours. There's a lot of reasons why people are on social media. For the first time, I created, again, because I'm not teaching a media class. For the first time, I created a Twitter account, Instagram, YouTube, specifically for my middle school. So that way I can share things. And okay, I've started over the last couple of weeks taking some pictures, and I put those into Google Photos to make a collage. And the reason I'm making the collage is so I can then put it out onto Twitter. But then you realize the reason I'm putting it out onto Twitter is so I can get likes and follows, and I can be that cool teacher who's doing cool things in their class, so I can then be noticed. So then I can, and then it just goes on and on and on. Why am I doing all of that stuff? That has nothing to do with how well my students are learning. I think social media is amazing. I think it opens up a lot of doors. I think it makes a lot of connections. But I don't think it has much to do with education. Just ask anybody that's written a book. That has nothing to do with what's going on in their classroom. Again, I feel the pushback when I say that because I can speak on both sides of the mouth for that one.
I'll be honest when I say that I can totally understand that social media can be a very destructive force. I'm totally, you know, and as a matter of fact, I teach my students to be very wary of it and know exactly what you're doing, because if the genie gets out of the box and it's against you, it can destroy you before you even know you're on fire.
Mm-hmm.
As professional educators, that is just career threatening. You cannot do that. But at the same time, I do truly believe that it can be a very powerful positive force. And one of the reasons I think that we want to lead our students down this path and teach them the power of it is, I still believe as instructors and educators that we have the power to teach the positive. And if we can do that before the negative is instilled, maybe we can turn that monster around.
So basically, if I can reiterate what you just said, we're here to be role models.
I believe there's power to that, yes.
And so, yes, that is also where you flip that. Everything that I just said, I flip it around and I go, yeah, but I got a brand new job. I've never taught this subject before. I have no curriculum. I certainly have a large background right now in broadcasting and education and podcast, all these different things that I'm working on. And I know the applications, but I don't have a degree in broadcast journalism. So what did I do? I went onto Twitter and I went onto Facebook and I said, where can I find information? I found a Facebook group. Now, if social media had not existed, we would be having a completely different conversation because I wouldn't have some of these ideas and thoughts. It is that double-edged microphone that we look at and say, where and how? Because everything that I just listed off, the answer is yes. I'm creating content to be seen. Yes, I'm creating content to become an influencer so I can then help and support my family. Yes, I would love to be all of those wonderful things. At the end, I'm in a position now where I'm saying, I'm creating this, so maybe I can be found by a company that might want to then do something for my students.
There was the question I was waiting to spring on you, was all of what you've said, I'm totally understanding with. The pretense that I believe is very important for teachers to talk about and think about as they're planning to bring this technology into the classroom is, what is the student growth that's going to occur as a result? I'm curious, as you're doing this, what is the response from your students?
They don't need to know any of that stuff. You know,
not as an adult, but I'm saying when they begin to apply the technology and they're telling their stories, do you see a difference in the writing? Do you see a difference in how they relate to projects? Is it, what kind of engagement are you seeing? I'm thinking as an educator, what is the ROI on the educational process?
So I'm going to take myself out of this conversation. I'm going to take myself out of this conversation, but I'm going to put myself in it. If you take my class, and those examples that I just gave you, right, of why am I awesome and why am I this, all those different projects. And then you transpose that against somebody who has been teaching for 5 years to 1,000 years, and they're not online. They're not seeing what else is out there. They are stuck in, this is how I learned it 5 years ago. I'm going to do the same exact thing because this is my curriculum. There's a difference in the education that those students are getting. On one hand, I can tell you that we wrote down 10 reasons of why I'm awesome. But really, the reason why we did that exercise is because I was teaching the kids using Google Docs how to do paragraph styles. We didn't do fonts. We did paragraph styles. We learned how to do bullet points. We learned how to take those bullet points and turn them into checklists. We learned how to change the heading one, and then you click on the update all button and all of the heading ones are there. So I'm using this little self-motivation of why am I awesome, but I'm teaching them everything that they need for that English class.
Now comes the next question. Somebody's out there waiting for this shoe to drop, and that's on assessment. As you start to look at this and you go through this process and you're using these creative ways, how do we return back to assessment where we can justify that the student has reached mastery or has not reached mastery on the standard that we eventually are responsible for?
Here's my answer. Does the English teacher now need to spend time in their class to teach paragraph styles, bullet points, heading one, heading two, all of those things? Oh, suddenly the English teacher now has more time in their class. So then I mentioned we did inspirational posters. That was all done in Google Drive. Sorry, Google Drawings. Then we went and we made website banners in Google Drawings. Then we made logos in Google Drawings. And you might be saying, why? Well, because I'm going to shift from Google Drawings into slide design, because drawings and slides are the same exact app. I'm really moving towards teaching them slide design. Why? Well, because the math teacher, science teacher, social studies teacher wants them to be able to get up. And again, tell me about yourself. Tell me about the situation. Who's the Civil War generals? If I can teach them slide design, then that gives the social studies teacher more time on their content.
And for those people that are keeping score, I just have to bring this up periodically because I think this is also part of it. Creative communicators, 6B, students create original works or responsibly repurpose or remix digital resources into new creations. And that's exactly what you're doing.
And I should read those sometime.
But that was one of the things I wanted to do in this podcast is I wanted to show so many people. I'm seeing them start with the standards and figure out what it is you want to teach. And I'm saying create an engaging lesson and figure out what standards it's applying to. And through the process of that engagement, you will eventually get through them all, but you're going to have your students dying to be with you while you're doing it instead of wishing they were somewhere else. If somebody walks away with something for this podcast, I hope that's the one message if you have to only pick one, I hope that's the one you pick. That's one of the reasons I really wanted you to be a guest today, and I saved this discussion specifically for you, is that I wanted to be able to go back and forth and back and forth and bat this stuff and have a verbal game of tennis, if you will. You know, I'm really grateful for your time, and I really appreciate the time that you've spent with us to talk about it, and I would love to have you back on the show and have this be a deeper conversation.
I would love to have all those things. I think the one thing that I learned out of this week is I'm not crazy, and neither are you out there who is listening. You can be awesome in your classroom. You can be totally motivational in your classroom. You can be completely creative in your classroom, and your students are going to have a good time with you, and your students are going to enjoy what's going on in your classroom. And oh, by the way, they're going to learn something. And maybe we realize that there aren't departments in our school. We all are here to work together. We're all here for that one reason. Get your student to tell me about yourself. If we can look at it that way, it doesn't matter if it's a podcast or a Google slide or an art project. If a student isn't able to, at the end of the day, express themselves, why are we here?
And just because he just did it for those keeping score, 6C, students communicate complex ideas clearly and effectively.
Did I get bingo yet?
You got bingo. So I once again, thank you so much for being a part of the podcast, and I really hope that you will join us again very soon.
Absolutely.
If you like what you're hearing on the show, make the choice to subscribe today. The show is gaining listeners all over the world, and we're grateful for your support. If you have any thoughts or comments about the show, reach out to us at makeadifferencenow2020@gmail.com. We look forward to seeing you on our next episode.